Final hour DDC here on this Friday afternoon. Darren McFarland and Derek Mason with you. Congratulations, Ryan, in Murfreesboro. Correctly said, the Predators have been down 0-2 in a series six times, and they are perfect in game threes. 6-0 in game threes. Can they be 7-0 after tomorrow afternoon? Let's talk with Dan Rosen, NHL.com. The hard-hitting question, Dan, can the Predators be 7-0 in game threes after falling behind 0-2 in a series after Saturday afternoon? What do you think?
Well, I certainly think they can be because they were way better for the most part in game two, but they couldn't, they couldn't start much worse than they did in game one. So
yeah,
that, but let's just be honest here. I mean, they got a 49 save performance from Connor Ingram and lost the game. And that's a problem because, with all due respect to Connor Ingram, you can't lose a game where your goalie, as unproven as he is in the National Hockey League, performs that way. And you can't expect him to perform that way, at least at that level, again, which is a problem. And they were also doubled up in shots, 51-26, so almost doubled up and one off. And they lost the game. So a couple of those things don't bode well for the Nashville Predators. Can they? Of course they can. They're a solid team. They got a lot of offensive guys. They can score. They should be able to. But I worry when you get a 49 save performance out of Connor Ingram and you lose the game. That's a concern for me.
What has been your observations? I know we'll get to the series that you've been covering heavily, but what's been your observations through two games, kind of your takeaways of this Colorado-Nashville series?
Well, look, Nashville was behind the eight ball when the series started because of UC Saros' injury. So, I mean, it's just a hard thing to deal with when your goalie who, you know, you relied on so heavily all season long is not available to you. And it obviously showed in the first period of game one. I mean, that was, you know, 5-0. You know, you can't do much. It's a problem, you know. Since that period, sure, it's been better for the Predators, but they're still not generating enough offensively. They're still on their heels a lot. Having watched the series from afar and only caught some highlights of the game last night, yeah, that's what you're seeing. You know, you're seeing Cale Makar being a dominant defenseman, as he is. And you're seeing the Colorado Avalanche do what the Colorado Avalanche have done all season long, which is generate and consistently come at you. And that's kind of what I expected, too. And you didn't expect 5-0 in the first period, you know, and that was the problem, you know. So that's where they lose game one, and it puts them so far behind the eight ball, and then the Avalanche feel like they're really rolling and they're good. And they've kind of been doing that since, even though last night was just an overtime game in 2-1. So it's been one-sided, even though that game went to overtime. But can they flip it? I think they can. I mean, we've seen teams do this against the Avalanche before. You know, the Vegas Golden Knights did it last year. But the problem is Vegas was a much better – I don't know if they're a much better team than Nashville is right now, but they obviously had, you know, a little bit better – they had the goalie. They had, you know, much better in net than we know that the Predators have. And maybe Connor Ingram is a good superstar in waiting. We'll see. But – it's a different animal than Nashville is now compared to what Vegas was last year, but it can be done. We've seen the Colorado Avalanche kind of, you know, be a team that takes their foot off the pedal when they think they got it going so well. They say they're different this year. I guess we'll find out.
How crazy is it as we're talking about this goaltenders? I saw this last night, and I was just like, wow. You've got six goalies that have been starting in these playoff games that make, Dan, less than $1 million a year. Husso makes $750,000 in St. Louis. Louis Domingue, they're down to their third guy. Pittsburgh, $750,000. Connor Ingram's salary for the Preds, $750,000. The guy in Carolina is $842,000. Swayman and Ottinger. Ottinger pitched a shutout in Calgary, and none of those guys make $1 million a year.
Yeah. What does that tell you about goaltending? In the National
I don't know. What does that tell us?
To me, what it says is if you want to be a decent team, you want to be a pretty good team, you don't got to pay a lot for goaltending. You want to be a championship team, you make up the difference there. The goaltending makes the difference. And that to me is the big thing. And, you know, look at Carolina. It's a little bit different. They're down to their third guy, but Kochetkov is pretty good, which comes in with a pedigree, so that's a little bit different. They wouldn't be playing him without injuries to Anderson. Obviously, Saros would be in the net in Nashville. Tristan Jarry would be in the net in Pittsburgh, but those guys are hurt. Swayman and Ullmark, it's a little bit of a different story. They've kind of split all year long. You know, so Ottinger has been the guy in Dallas all year long, so that obviously may, you know he's going to get paid. Billy Huso's taken over that reins from Jordan Binnington in St. Louis. He's going to get paid. So it's a little bit different in that sense, but what it tells you is that if you want to be a pretty decent team and a playoff team, you don't got to overpay for goaltending. But I still think you need the goaltending to win, and the elite goalies get paid.
Yeah, most everybody was able to get the series tied at one. So far, let's just now go broad scope as we begin game threes. So let's starting tonight. But overall, like, what's been a couple takeaways? What good or bad through two games here in these playoffs?
Well, the Carolina Hurricanes have stayed with their domination of the Boston Bruins all season long, and it's continued in the playoffs, so that's good for them, obviously bad for the Bruins.
What is it, like 26-4 or something?
Yeah.
Crazy?
I mean, they've owned them. They've owned them this season. Yeah. I mean, Carolina can do that to a team. It's good. Even a team as good as Boston is, Carolina can do it. They have no holes, the Carolina Hurricanes. They don't have a weakness, and I think we could say the same thing about Colorado and probably Calgary, although they didn't score the other night. You know, no weaknesses. And Carolina certainly is that team in the East, I think, that has no holes. And I think Tampa has no holes either. And, you know, they struggled, obviously, in game one. It was a wake-up. They woke up. Now it's going to be a very interesting thing to see game three, Toronto-Tampa, because now you got the Tampa Bay Lightning back home and saying to themselves, we gave it to them. We gave them their one. They were the two-time defending Stanley Cup champs. We don't lose back-to-back, so we didn't lose game two. And, you know, maybe now we can put them on the ropes a little bit. And the pressure just swings so heavily to the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is interesting. You got Edmonton. Again, you know, look, I think Edmonton had a nice rebound effort. Florida had a nice rebound effort. The Rangers had a nice rebound effort. Pittsburgh, unfortunately, is dealing with a ton of injuries. Casey DeSmith had core muscle surgery today. He's done for the playoffs, so it's Louis Domingue's net. Raquel and Dumoulin are both out, so that's tough. They're in tough right there for Pittsburgh Penguins, because I don't even think the Rangers have come close to playing their best game yet, and it's 1-1 going to Pittsburgh, so with a triple overtime thriller. So it's been interesting, and you're right. I mean, it's a lot of teams were able to even it up, except for one.
So who right now, you get to cheat because we've got to see two games through all these series. Who do you think right now is the higher seed that you think, from what you've seen through two games, could be in trouble the rest of the series?
The higher seed that could be in trouble, Toronto. Toronto could be in trouble because, you know, I thought Toronto, after the performance they put together in game one, I thought that they needed to win game two. And now you've given life to the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions. And that's a concern for me if I am the Toronto Maple Leafs. There's no question about that. I think Minnesota righted itself. St. Louis is dealing with a couple of injuries there on D. That's going to hurt them. Edmonton righted itself. That's fine. Carolina, we know, has been really good. Florida righted itself. I think they're going to be okay. I mean, I did put Washington in the next series, so I'll still be a little bit concerned about the Panthers. Now they're going back to Capital One Arena again. Colorado, we know what they've done, obviously. And Calgary lost, but I'm still buying the Calgary Flames. I think they're so deep and talented, and the way they play games, they can make it a slog or they can zip it around the ice on you. So I think they're fine. But Toronto's the team that's the higher seed that I would look at and say I'd be a little concerned because he gave life to the two-time defending champs.
We'll talk with Dan Rosen, NHL.com. Now, Dan, where is this, getting back to the Colorado Avalanche and the Nashville Predators, where is this Colorado team vulnerable? Because it seemed like this past game, and you said it was almost like a wasted performance by Connor Ingram. He played so well in net, and you still didn't get the win. Where is this team vulnerable that the Nashville Predators can take advantage of?
They're vulnerable if you force them to play defense, because they're not that great doing that. You know, they are a high-flying team that can score goals in bunches. If you force, and it's the hard, it's probably one of the hardest things to do in hockey, but if you can force Nathan MacKinnon and Mikko Rantanen and Gabe Landeskog and Nazem Kadri, you can force those guys to play on their own end, to get the puck behind their goal line and have to go 200 feet. If you can be physical against them and hit them, grind them down a little bit, which is exactly what happened to them in the playoffs the last few years, they're vulnerable. But you got to be able to do that, and that's a hard thing to do. And we have not seen yet the Nashville Predators be able to do that, and that's the concern. But you can score against them. Like they are a, like I said, they're a terrific team offensively, flying up and down the ice, no question about it. But if you can force them into playing in their own end, you can score goals against the Colorado Avalanche. It's, you know, they gave up 2.83 per game in the regular season. That's good, especially when you're scoring, you know, you're scoring almost four a game. 2.83 is pretty good, you know, this season. But again, it can make them vulnerable. You need to be able to push them and make them feel the pain a little bit and play with the puck in their end instead of having them constantly come wave after wave at you.
Last thing, real quick, on the way out. Yeah, as you can imagine, we've talked a ton this year. We have David Poile on our show every Tuesday, every week, and we've asked him a bunch throughout the course of these negotiations. But do you think this series has any bearing at all on, you know, getting the Forsberg deal done? And when do you think this thing is going to get done? Because obviously the Predators know they need to get this done before, what, the second week of July, because he can't hit the market.
Well, I don't think this series has any bearing on that. I think as soon as Philip Forsberg has decided that he didn't want to sign a contract during the regular season, that he wants to see what he's worth on the open market. And that doesn't mean he won't go back to Nashville. And you know, but I think he's a player who's saying to himself, I'm 27 years old, almost 28. I'm coming off my big year. I'm a UFA. I got to see what I'm worth. And I think he's earned that right. And that is my guess is what he's going to be thinking. And that does the series here, I don't think, has any bearing on that. I mean, if he was 100% sure he was going to sign in Nashville, he would have done it already. I think he wants, you know, some guys like to get wind and dine and see what else is out there. See what's, grass isn't always greener on the other side. They might find that out. But at the same time, they kind of want to know what their worth is out there. Because he can get a contract offer from the Predators that he thinks is fair value, but he doesn't know it's fair value because he hasn't gotten any offers from anybody else either.
Yeah, I was afraid you were going to say that. Dan, thanks for the visit. As always, continue to enjoy the playoffs, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks again.
All right, thanks, guys. Anytime.
Dan Rosen, NHL.com. Good stuff from him. We'll come back and discuss that on the other side, Derek. I want to get your thoughts on what he just said there at the very end, because I have thoughts on it as well. You're listening to the DDC, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Well, I don't think this series has any bearing on that. I think as soon as Philip Forsberg has decided that he didn't want to sign a contract during the regular season, that he wants to see what he's worth on the open market. And that doesn't mean he won't go back to Nashville. I think he's a player who's saying to himself, I'm 27 years old, almost 28. I'm coming off my big year. I'm a UFA. I got to see what I'm worth. And I think he's earned that right. And that is my guess is what he's going to be thinking. And that does the series here, I don't think, has any bearing on that. I mean, if he was 100% sure he was going to sign in Nashville, he would have done it already. I think he wants, you know, some guys like to get wind and dine and see what else is out there. See what's, grass isn't always greener on the other side. They might find that out. But at the same time, they kind of want to know what their worth is out there. Because he can get a contract offer from the Predators that he thinks is fair value, but he doesn't know it's fair value because he hasn't gotten any offers from anybody yet.
Dan Rosen, NHL.com. Boy, I hope he's wrong. Free agency begins on July 13th. I think I don't want to say anything. I'm going to get your thoughts first. I want to hear what you say before I go out there and tell you my thoughts on Philip Forsberg hitting the market or seeing what his value is on the market.
I think Dan is 100% right. But it doesn't mean that he's not going to sign back here in Nashville. But he's never been in this position before where, you know, he's playing this well and he now gets to reap the rewards of it. So why not, you know, take the opportunity? Because the money's going to be there. I said this about A.J. Brown. Whether he gets it in Tennessee or gets it somewhere else, the money's going to be there. Same with, you know, with Phillip. The money's going to be there. Either he's going to take a deal that he feel is fair here in Nashville, or he's going to take it somewhere else. But you don't know what's fair until you see what the market says is fair for you. You know? So I'm in agreement with Dan in regards to that. I just think if he was 100% sure that he knew what his value was, then he would have already signed with the Predators. But because he doesn't, it's sort of, okay, let me wait and see. Not that I don't want to be in Nashville, but let me see what the market says about me. And then after what the market says about me, after they've wined and dined me, then I'm just going to come back home and sign a deal here because this is where I want to be. So I don't think he's wrong with saying that at all. It may not happen that way.
Why do all that?
Because guys want to feel appreciated. Every guy, when you get in this position, if that contract just doesn't, you want to feel appreciated. You want to feel loved, whether it's by your current team or by other teams out there. You want to feel that what you've done is going to be appreciated. That's what A.J. Brown went through. That's what Deebo Samuel's going through. That's what a lot of athletes go through. Hell, I went through it when, you know, I was ready to sign another contract. You just want to feel appreciated.
Yeah, but you also have to be prepared for what if somebody wines and dines you and you look around and you're like, whoa, man. Then all of a sudden you have to be prepared to leave?
That's a part of it. But it's
– but you just painted the picture, go out, wine and dine, experience it, show me love, and then come back here.
No. You want to be in a position to say, I've made the right an informed decision, which means, okay, the Predators are saying this is what my worth, because I've always said, listen, you're only worth as much as somebody wants to pay you. So Nashville has said, okay, this is what you're worth, whatever that number was. All right, that's cool. Let me go see what somebody else may think I'm worth. Let's see if your number is true to form. If it's not, then now is my decision to make whether I come back or I leave. But now I've had sort of this informed decision now, because it's just, what do they tell you when you're getting something done on your house or your car? Get quotes. Get a quote. Get more than one quote. Why? Because then you're able to make an informed decision on whether this is the best deal for me. So, again, it's not saying that he's not going to come back, but he's going to make a decision based upon the numbers that he's seen.
Is there any chance he goes out there and that happens and David Poile gets to say, see, told you so? Or do you think it's going to be Philip Forsberg's representation smiling at David Poile going, see, told you so? Who gets to say, see, I told you so?
that's the
right. You know, I'm saying that because think about how many, right? Think about how many discussions they've had, right? Uh-huh. Like somebody's, you know, all the back and forths. Like somebody's going to get to say that.
Yeah.
Now, whether they choose to say it, I don't know if that actually happens, but.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see because, you know, the numbers don't come out unless you allow them to come out, right? Like if somebody offers you something behind closed, if your agent calls and y'all trying to work out a deal and you're just talking about the particulars, those particulars don't come out unless they get leaked, right? Unless somebody wants them to be out.
Correct, yes.
You know, so we won't know unless that number is higher than what the Predators were offering. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If it was lower, it will not come out. But if it's higher, they're going to leak out somehow. This is what so-and-so is offering Philip Forsberg for X amount of years.
Yep. James on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, says, why can the Preds offer an 8-year deal and everybody else can only offer 7 years? That's because he's their property, and it's to encourage guys to stay basically home.
It's an incentive.
It's an incentive to stay with the team rather than guys hopping all over the place. And so it's an incentive for you to be able to keep your own players.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it always happens. We know Matt Duchene came here. He only got 7 years.
Yeah.
But more times than not, that is a pretty big stick. It's a pretty big card to have in the deck. That extra year. That's guaranteed.
It means a lot in a guaranteed sport.
In a lot of cases, that extra year does keep people home or keeps people with their team. But that's why they do it.
Yeah. Because the NHL money it hasn't within the last couple of years, and I could be wrong, because of the salary cap. It hasn't went up much in the last couple of years. So I can't see somebody signing a deal, you know, and think, you know, signing whatever the deal is and then at the end of the deal saying, man, you know, you went from making, say you made $8 million per year on that deal, and then you think in the middle of that deal somebody's getting 12 per year. I don't think that's going to happen in hockey.
No.
Yeah. So those deals are just, they're always going to remain, in this day and age, they're always going to remain good deals.
We're the official home of NASCAR. Start spreading that. Spread that news. Sunday, 1:30, the Goodyear 400 at Darlington Raceway. Also, Chasing Checkers will get you started Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. Yeah, Chase Briscoe, William Byron. They'll be interviewed by one Chase McCabe. NASCAR on the Game, presented by Nashville Super Speedway and Nashville Fairgrounds Speedway. Where were you, man? You left me hanging.
My bad. I'm sorry. I just wanted to get the in. I told Max, I said, man, I don't know if Max really knew who this person was, but I said, Max, man, I came out the studio and I said, you know, I said a bad word, which I shouldn't have, but it was all fun. I was like, man, I sound like, you know what, Muttley. And he started laughing. I was like, you know who Muttley is? Do you know who Muttley is, Darren?
No.
Oh, man. Muttley is Hanna-Barbera. Remember when he used to race and Muttley was always that little dog like, the way he laughed and he was always trying to sabotage things?
Yes.
That's how I sound, especially when I try to laugh. Sound just like Muttley. So
Now that you've done that, yeah, it does.
Yeah, so.
Well done.
Max don't know who Muttley is. Look him up, Max. Go back and watch some Hanna-Barbera, okay?
Speaking of Max will get our coverage started tomorrow leading up to Game 3 pregame. So our coverage here on these airwaves, ESPN 102.5 The Game, will begin at 1 o'clock. I've got pregame starting at 2:30, so Max is going to go from 1 until 2:30. I'll have the official Predators pregame, 2:30 to 3:30. Puck drop at 3:30. Pete Weber and Hal Gill will have your call. So Game 3, if you're looking for lots of talk leading up to that, this will be your place tomorrow afternoon starting at 1 o'clock. So keep that in mind. I'm a little mixed going back just thinking about this as we kind of wrap this up. Because, by the way, we are going to have Ian Ayer next year. A really good conversation with Nashville SC CEO on their first ever home game. They'll have their second ever home game this Sunday. But that's just around the corner before we get out of here. I have a mixed bag on getting, because typically in sports, if you hit the market, you wind up going, here you go. And I know that's not the case here, but I still don't feel good about if, because typically we see people leave when they hit the market. I know Landeskog just did it last year in the offseason with Colorado, and that is a big chip to have, that extra year nobody else can do. But guess what? If he gets to July 13th and free agency period begins and he hits the market, guess what? The Predators lose.
Player.
Derek, that chip.
Yeah.
They lose that chip. They lose that card. They don't have that card. They don't have that chip. So if they don't get it done before July 13th and he hits the market,
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So
they lose that chip.
Yeah, once
they lose
free agency
that card.
Start, that eighth year is out the door.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Well, it's very imperative for them to try to get a deal done.
Yeah, that's why I was bringing it up.
Yeah. See, I didn't realize that because I don't know all of the ins and outs of hockey free agency. But I thought that eighth year always remained. But I guess it doesn't.
Not when free agency begins on July 13th. All right, give me your thoughts on, before we get to Ian Ayer, real quick. Thoughts on Grizzlies Game 3. That's tonight, right? What do you think? And Dylan Brooks is suspended for that game. So he will not be in the lineup.
This has been a really good series, man.
Yes, it has been.
It's been, you got the old guard versus the new one. You know, the old dudes are standing at the gate, and the young guys are just coming, trying to push their way through. And both games have been very exciting. Heck, Memphis should be up 2-0, honestly. They should be up 2-0, but they're not. But I think... going back to Cali, I think Golden State gets the first game. Losing Dylan Brooks is huge for Memphis. But I think they do pull one out, but not the first one. I think they get the second one, and this is going to be a back and forth. So it's good that Memphis has – home court advantage.
Actually, game three is tomorrow.
Yeah, game three is tomorrow. Oh, yeah,
tomorrow night on ABC.
This thing is going seven. This thing is going seven.
Preds game three will be over, and that game starts at 7:30 on ABC.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, Ja's playing fabulous right now.
Yep.
Jaren Jackson is playing really good. I mean, this team is really, you know, collectively – playing really good basketball. But here's the part that is scary.
We got to wrap it.
Quickly, here's the part before that's scary. Klay Thompson hasn't been on his game.
Yep.
And that's scary.
Yep. But Memphis probably gets some credit for that as well. We'll come back. We'll finish up Friday's edition of the DDC with Nashville SC CEO Ian Ayer. That's next. Back here on the DDC, Darren McFarland, Derek Mason with you. Always good to catch up with Nashville SC CEO Ian Ayer. My guest is This Is Radio, but our next guest, Ian Ayer, the CEO of Nashville SC, is smiling from ear to ear.
You sure he still ain't
there? He would have been smiling a little bit bigger if they had gotten the win, but my guess is he's smiling. Ian, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Enjoying this beautiful weather, and definitely smiling, that's for sure.
It's got to be a little bit nerve-wracking, right? The build-up to all of this, what you've had to go through. Because, look, I've built a house. Derek has built a house. You built a house that's going to hold 30,000 people. It's got to be horrible going, it's painful, right? Because I remember them telling us, don't come by here every day and look at, you're going to drive yourself batty, right? But you kind of did have to watch this process the whole way through. Did it feel forever to get to this point last Sunday?
Yeah, it was. It really was. I mean, it was kind of surreal for 4 years going from, you know, drawing on a tabletop to opening the doors on Sunday afternoon. And you're right, you know, all the way through that journey, lots of bumps and challenges. I think going into Sunday, we always felt it was going to be a success. We knew we sold out and we knew that Nashville would come out, but we couldn't have predicted the weather and the atmosphere and the energy. It was so great.
So one thing, if I'm admitting up front, that I thought was going to be a heavy topic that you guys were going to have to figure out along the way, and I'm sure I'll be curious your answer, but I didn't see a whole lot of it, which, I'll be honest, pleasantly surprised me. I thought a lot of people were going to be belly aching about parking and how difficult it was to get to the match on Sunday. Yes, that was still in play, but it was nowhere near the levels that I expected to hear from fans. What was your feedback on the parking situation for Sunday?
Yeah, it was, I think we said, we tried to manage expectations from a few weeks out. So it was always going to be a challenge anyway, being a new venue, whether you have 500 spaces or 5,000 or 50,000 spaces. It's always a challenge with a new venue, traffic, routes in, routes out. You know, we talked a lot about having this up to 5,000 spaces that we control. You know, perspective on that for me was always the Titans have 7,500 and they have more than twice the capacity we have. So I wasn't particularly concerned that there would be no parking because there is, you know, relatively there's a lot. But it's more about people, the people who get those spaces, finding their way in, finding their way out, understanding how long you have to wait to get in and out. And then all of the other people finding their own way to either get to the stadium, rideshare, taxis, scooters, bicycles, walking, and also finding parking elsewhere, you know, with people who were selling spaces on lots. And I think we were hugely grateful to the crowd that came early and kind of avoided those big log jams. And we're hoping for some of the same on Sunday as people just, it's like you say, you build a new house. You kind of need to know all the little nuances of the neighborhood, and I have to say the neighbors in the neighborhood were awesome and very complimentary about how fans conducted themselves, and so, you know, I think we got a B. You know, it wasn't an A plus, but we'll get there. But I think we probably got a B. So.
Well, for all of us who've been through or just moving into a new house, mate, whether you built it or not, it's got to settle in, right?
Yeah.
And then once first you get in, you're like, oh, you walk in, oh, it's beautiful. Oh, my gosh, it's a dream come true. And then, you know, once you're in it every day, and then it's like, oh, well, this door, you know, it's not closing properly. This window's not doing this, right? So I know it's just one game, and you're gonna turn around and do this again Sunday, Ian, but what was some of the settling in, right? Now that you've gone through it, what, when you look around, maybe it's even feedback. What jumps out at you now that you've settled
absolutely.
In?
There's a lot, right? You know, I mean, on the face of it, as you said, as you looked at it, so many people with so much positivity, you know, I think everybody had a great time to a person. But, you know, we met, you know, Monday morning, Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning. You know, we've been going through. We ran a survey. We sent the survey out to some fans just to get a spread on the audience and get their feedback. And it's all small things. There was nothing there that we thought, oh, my God, that's a disaster. It's more about, as you said, it's the fine-tuning. It's making sure that people sort of wayfinding and directionally know where they're going, dealing with pinch points of, you know, traffic of people. It's, you know, small things, really lots of small things that we'll work through. And you know, I'd be, you know, I always want to be honest, and I would be wrong if I said we'll solve everything by Sunday. You know, we will just evolve as the team has and get better. I think, as I say, for what we had to deliver for the very first time, I think we did a great job. But that we won't be sitting down and just resting on it. It was a lot of very small things, and you know, some of our vendors on the concessions were sold out before halftime because they just believe how popular the food was. And I'm talking about a combination of our concession partner, Levy, who are the best in the business at this, and our local, you know, most of our concessions are run by local partners like, you know, Daddy's Dogs and Prince's Hot Chicken and Corner Pop. And not everybody saw, but so many people were over demand for what they expected, and some were able to cope admirably that, and some weren't. And that's just, you know, understanding the audience and understanding the popularity, and it will come with time, but we feel good about it.
Speaking with the CEO of the Nashville SC, Ian Ayer, he's on the line with us. So you brought up the team, Ian. Derek Mason, who's sitting next to me, was on that 99 team of the Titans that moved into their new home, and they parlayed that into every game, home game being sold out, and they parlayed that season and all the enthusiasm of being in the new home, the new football stadium, and they went to the Super Bowl. The team, how nice is it to see, and tell us what you think, to be not only now in your new home and all the excitement that comes with that, but you may also be equipped with a team that can make a long run.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we look at our first two seasons. I don't think anybody, even in this whole league, would imagine that in our first two seasons, we only lost two games at home across the two. Non-lost at home last season, two in the first season, made the playoffs in the first 2 years. And obviously, we had a difficult stretch early this year in the sense of eight road games in a row, but picked up great points on the road, and then, you know, obviously didn't win on Sunday, but tied, and so that, you know, the unbeaten record continues, so to speak. I think for Gary and coaches and the team, you know, we're really focused on always being and making Geodis Park a fortress, and if you can win as we have been, you know, relatively well on the road, or very well on the road, should I say, but, you know, it's hard to win on the road in MLS generally. If we can win those, keep taking points on the road and make home a fortress, then we have a genuine chance every year, because once you get in the playoffs, it's, you know, it's a small run of games, one and done, to get to the final and win the thing. And we got to the conference semi-final both of the last 2 years. And, you know, like every team, we always want to do better. So that's absolutely the objective. And it would be awesome to be the first team in Nashville to win a national championship.
We're talking with Ian Ayer, CEO of Nashville SC. Now, Ian, I want to go back to just game time, you know, things that happened before the game, and how, you know, you want to try to facilitate everything and make sure everyone gets in and out of the stadium, you know, in a timely manner, safely, and everything else. You know, having games on a weekend is totally different from having games on a weekday. Now, you guys, you do have a game coming up on the weekday. What advice would you give SC fans? Will it be the same thing? Hey, listen, get there early. You know, find your seat, get a parking space early, because traffic during the week is typically worse than it is during the weekend.
Yeah, that'll absolutely be the message. I think the fortunate thing is we purposely timed the timing of these first two games to be in the middle of the afternoon on a Saturday, mm-hmm. And that was, again, to help everybody, police, ourselves, fans. Because there's a secondary competition in soccer, so we play US Open Cup next week, which is a kind of, you know, a lesser followed competition, let's say. And we expect a much smaller crowd for that competition. It's still in its kind of earlier round. And so it's kind of fortunate for us that first night game will come with probably a lesser crowd. Who we'll see, you never know with with Nashville. You know, it could be full. But I think that'll be a good test and a good chance for a smaller crowd to come and experience the nuances of an evening game. And then I think the following Saturday, the following week in the midweek, we also have a midweek game in the evening against Montreal, And so that'll be the first test of a, you know, a fuller stadium on an evening. So again, we're easing our way into it, but we'll make sure we talk to the police and NDOT and everybody else and get advice on what's the most important. It's not easy to say to everybody, come early on a weekday. People have got work and school. And so we'll find the best advice we can find and try to help people as much as possible.
Now, the fan base, how have you seen it grown over the last couple of seasons? You've talked about, you know, the success that the team has had over the last 2 or 3 years, but how have you seen the fan base grow?
It's been, I have to say, it was the biggest and most, you know, proud piece for me was just how much this city has engaged with this sport and this team in such a short time. And I spent a lot of time talking to people like Sean, Henry of the Predators about how hockey evolved. And you know, to go from, you know, a few thousand people initially watching amateur soccer here and then being a USL team with 4,000 or 5,000 people coming to games. And, you know, we have 22,000 season ticket holders past that number this week. And, you know, we're almost sold out. I think this morning when I looked, we sold over 27,000 tickets for Sunday. There's every chance that'll sell out in the next day or two. You know, to say that when I got here in 2018, I remember being in a cab coming from the airport and the guy asked me where my accent was from and what I was doing here. And I told him and he was kind of turned around, looked at me and said, I'm not sure soccer's a thing here. it's certainly a thing now, that's for sure. And it's, you know, it's only going to go up, I think, as people come and experience that place, this team, those fans. I just see it growing and growing. And you know, we've got the biggest soccer stadium in the league. And, you know, if it carries on like it is, it might not be big enough.